We're going to hear a review of Salt of the Earth, of the movie that came out of one of the struggles of that union, Mine Mill Smelter, this time in New Mexico. And I emphasize in New Mexico because we've got an extraordinarily distinguished panel ready to make that review. Jan Hocken is herself a prize-winning documentary filmmaker, and Laurie Mercier has written her own, really one of my all-time favorite books in labor history, on Mine Mill Smelter Union up in Montana. The book is called Anaconda. So here to talk about Salt of the Earth, Jan Hocken, Laurie Mercier.
Thank you, Norm. Well, this is Laurie Mercier, and I'm with Jan Hocken to talk about Salt of the Earth, a 1954 film written by Michael Wilson, directed by Herbert Biberman, and produced by Paul Jericho, all blacklisted by the Hollywood establishment due to their alleged involvement in communist politics. Based on the actual long and difficult 1951 strike against the Empire Zinc Company in Grant County, New Mexico, led by a Mexican-American local of the International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers to protest the dual wage structure that pitted workers against one another by paying white miners more than Latinos. The film focuses on Ramon Quintero, Juan Chacon, a strike organizer and union officer whose progressive beliefs don't extend to the family home. Gradually, his wife Esperanza, played by Mexicana actor Rosario Revueltas, pregnant with their third child, begins to assert herself and becomes instrumental in encouraging other local women to lead the picket line since the male miners are enjoined from picketing. She and other miners' wives fight the bullying tactics of mine owners and corrupt police. They physically confront and turn away scabs, and they are jailed. In a gender role reversal, the men have to take over domestic duties, which includes watching children, washing clothes, and preparing meals. And in the process, they become aware of the difficulties their wives have had to endure in less than adequate company housing that does not include indoor plumbing. Ultimately, the strikers are victorious, and the film celebrates the solidarity of workers in their community and imagines another world where equality, solidarity, and community win the day. Jan, we've reached the 65th anniversary of the film, and I think it still holds up well, but it has a lot of significance that we can talk about today.
Well, the Salt of the Earth has gathered tremendous and well-deserved loyalty and affection since its making, and partly because of the process that this film team and the community that made it went through to bring it to completion, which is itself a fascinating story that we won't be able to get into today. But it's a kind of remarkable product of that era of McCarthyism and Hollywood and the pressures they were under. But it's also suffered criticisms over the years, the main one being that it's a propaganda film, that it's described as agitprop, which is a less, I guess, derisive term than a propaganda film, socialist realism, socialist realist cinema. So it might be helpful to talk about what that means. And if it's a propaganda film, is it a good one? And I think usually that means that it's the story's too simple, it doesn't reflect the complexity or nuances of life, their caricatures of good and evil. What's your take on this criticism?
Well, of course, if we compare it to other films of the 1950s, it looks pretty good, I think.
In terms of the propaganda films on the other side?
The film that won the most Academy Awards, On the Waterfront by Elie Kazan, of course, is another film of propaganda that's anti-union.
Well, in Hollywood, it's regularly enlisted during the war effort to defend the war effort and to support the agenda of McCarthyism in the 50s. So you're saying anything that runs counter to that, of course, is going to be, in a sense, a propaganda film.
And Salt of the Earth is unique in that the filmmakers actually collaborated with the people in the community to make this film. So in some ways, the community wanted that particular perspective portrayed that may have portrayed miners and their families and community in a very positive light and demonized, of course, the other side, the cops and the company. But, of course, since the film was blacklisted in all quarters, no professional actors were employed other than Rosetta Revueltas, who was a pretty famous actor in Mexico, brought up. And then Will Gear, who was another blacklisted actor from Hollywood, plays the sheriff. But otherwise, these are all local community members who play the leading roles in the film.
And I think countering the propaganda charge, and I do think films can seem propagandistic if they don't draw you into the complexity and dilemmas of lived life. And I think in this sense, the film did draw you into the struggles around gender and sexism, kind of the patriarchal stance of these Mexican-American workers and their struggles to acknowledge women. It wasn't a brute force kind of fighting the bosses. It was about the creativity and inventiveness of struggle, too, and which I think reflected the creativity and inventiveness of making this, you know, when none of the labs in Hollywood would take their film stock. It was very exciting to see, well, how are they going to handle this situation at various times when it looked like they were defeated? So there was real drama.
And I think that's a particular characteristic of this progressive union, the Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers Union, that it did go beyond the shop floor in organizing, that it recognized that an entire community had to be behind workers in their struggles. And so I think this film does represent that kind of community unionism that was so key in struggles from the 1930s through the 1960s, you know, the peak of unionism in the United States.
And the CIO unions that were undermined or expelled. And in this film, there was a riveting scene around the eviction where it looked like the company town really had defeated the strike because they started evicting families from houses. And at the very beginning, you see they don't own the house, but they can grow flowers in their homes, which kind of foreshadows something that can't be owned, that they can own the house and own the property, but they cannot own the spirit of the people. And how then the community organizes around that, it's very tense when you watch that scene, and then how they organize the whole community to defy the eviction. That reflected the politics of that kind of social unionism.
Right, right. And I think that's another byproduct of the Cold War. When labor historians try to answer the question why the United States has had such a weak labor movement, of course, we see that today. Many or most look to this period of the Cold War and the fact that the CIO was compelled to, under anti-communist pressure, eliminate a number of these unions that at the time were representing people of color, women, office workers, all these different growing sectors of the economy that would not be unionized, that would weaken the labor movement in the late 20th and 21st centuries.
And part of what I loved about the film as well is both that it's told from Esperanza, the wife's, point of view. She's the narrator. The story is from her point of view. And initially, she finds some joys in life to sustain her spirit in listening to the radio or a flower garden, but they're not enough to really sustain her, and she's kind of a depressive. And then she gets involved with these other women, and the idea of feminism here is you can't just stand up alone to your husband, you know. It takes a group to defy the bosses, but also to defy husbands. And there are a lot of these feminist Hollywood stories where it's one woman against her husband or she flees. This is about the collective spirit of sisterhood, and that's the only way they get any place, including with their individual husbands. So that was very forward-thinking. And there's joy and pleasure in that. I mean, you see her kind of singing and dancing, and it felt real.
And the joy is in political organizing.
Yeah.
And solidarity. And here you have these women who are excluded from the major workplace, the male-dominated workplace, but yet they figure out a way to become involved in workplace politics. You know, through their activism, they're taking over the picket, and then you see them in the union hall actually participating in voting. And again, that's kind of a agitprop message of the Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers Union about the importance of democratic autonomy in the local union.
So there was perhaps some aspirational goals here, but so that is what movies are about. They're partly wish fulfillment, as well as this had a documentary grounding to it. It was interesting how Esperanza, the main protagonist, she did empathize with her husband and at times was quite tender with the assaults on his ego as a man, as a racial minority who was the subject of targeted for along racist lines and his manhood targeted. But she also said, "You're not sleeping in here with me tonight, and I'm not turning back." You see her gathering strength and confronting him, but she expected him to do better. And that was always, I think, in part the threat of feminism wasn't so much anger toward men. In part, it's expecting men to do better and that they can come to their women partners as equals, and they don't have to subject women to be define their dignity.
You know, Jan, we should probably just say something about Rosaura Revueltas and the fact that
and this is Salt of the Earth, the 1954 film we're talking about.
Yes, and that one of the many problems the filmmakers faced was the fact that immigration came in, and, I mean, not only were vigilantes attacking the film and the projectionists wouldn't show it, but midway through the film, immigration officials deported Revueltas because of her so-called leftist leanings. And so the filmmakers had to actually go to Mexico and film her separate and then smuggle the film back into the United States to insert in the editing process.
And gave her at times, she was kind of this solitary figure, but then she was also embedded in a world that kind of helped her hold her own world together. So the editing was quite brilliant on that front.
So in closing, we should also mention the role of Clinton and Virginia Jenks, who actually play the organizers in this film, and they were real organizers for the Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers, and we're going to hear more about Clinton Jenks from Ray Caballero in a minute. But they, too, provide this model for progressive organizing where they take, they play a very quiet role letting people in the community take charge of the strike and all of the actions around it. So I think that also presents this model for organizing. But I think we might agree that the film holds up well. It's kind of become a cult classic in college classrooms, especially
yeah.
when in studies classrooms.
And one line that shouts out for relevance is the bosses say, "Go back to where you came from." And the workers, the Mexican American Latino workers say, "Yeah, some of us came from Oklahoma." So that is a longstanding strategy than they confronted in this film.
So to listeners, you can find this actually streaming from the Multnomah County Library. It's also available DVD at the Multnomah County Library. This is Laurie Mercier and Jan Hocken. We've been reviewing Salt of the Earth.